see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Morning.
Morning.
It's good to see you all. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. One thing, after the Dharma talk and chatting and stuff, we're going to go down the hall and see the new space. It's in progress, but I'd like y'all to see it. That after. But I thought about starting the new year, that it would be good for us to recall how we stay close to our intention. Because for most of us, the new year has some more or less sense of reminding us, what do we want to do with our lives? You know, how do we want to spend this time? New Year's has always seemed kind of odd to me, because it's completely arbitrary, right? Every day could be a new year. It's like, it's just a date. But, you know, everybody around us is like, Happy New Year. And it's just kind of in the air to think about, well, what's important to us? So staying close to what's important to us means that we challenge ourselves and we encourage ourselves both. We do both. Without challenging, we can get, we can go to sleep. You know, we can just, oh, this is so comfortable. My bed and covers is so comfortable. You know, we can just go to sleep. But without encouragement, the challenges can become kind of brittle and hard. Discouraging instead of encouraging. So I thought about something I talked about a few years ago, and I thought I'd revisit it. In the one traditional way of staying close to our lives and remembering what we're about comes from the Upajatana Sutta. Upajatana Sutta, the sutta on subjects of contemplation. And there's a whole bunch of them in the sutta. But the part of it that's most famous or most well-known are called the five remembrances. The five realities of our life. And the sutta, the Buddha recommends that we recall these often. And this is a practice for everyone. As the Buddha says, men, women, lay people, ordained people, you know, any kind of categories you can come up with, it's for everybody. So they say, you know, think about these things, recall these things. And if we recall these things, we leave off corrosive or difficult binding attachments that obstruct us from a life of awakening, from a life of from a life, basically. You know, when we're bound and obstructed, we're not alive. We're not engaged. We're not appreciative. So the first three remembrances. I'll read them. So we're going to talk about the five remembrances. This topic is the five remembrances and what I call the five other remembrances. And I'll tell you about those later. But the five remembrances, and I do apologize for making these in microscopic script. I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. I cannot escape ill health. I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. And the fifth one is, I have two translations here. I inherit the results of my actions in body, speech, and mind. My actions are the ground on which I stand. And this next one is by Thich Nhat Hanh. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. So the first three remembrances are linked directly to the Buddha's own life. So as we recall, the Buddha was, as it goes, raised in a palace or at least in comfort and in a relatively elite status. So he was not confronted in his early life, although his mother died. He was not confronted with poverty, with illness, with that level of difficulty. But he went out with the charioteer, once he kind of snuck out, there's different parts of this, and he saw an old person, and he saw a sick person, and he saw a dead person. And when he was confronted with this, he was confounded. He didn't understand. What is this? He said, what is this? And these encounters shook him to his core. They caused him to stop and reflect on his life and make a choice to live a different way. So these are sometimes called heavenly messengers or gifts. Old age, sickness, and death is a gift because they cause us to stop and look and see and make choices and shift the way we view our lives. Not just okay, what's my to-do list? How do I have to do this next? What am I going to get done today until your days are gone? The way in which we contemplate these things, or the idea the Buddha says, is that by contemplating these things, we weaken or overcome what's called the conceit of youth, good health, and being alive. So the idea is that that when we're young and healthy, we can tend to think it's always going to be that way, right? That we're just, it's like it's a foreign territory when we see someone who's old and frail and struggling. It's like, are they the same beings? It's kind of like when you see a little infant. It's like, really? I started that way? Like, I don't remember that. I don't have any connection to that. So this conceit of youth is this sense of permanence, this sense of recklessness, this sense of it's always going to be this way. I don't have to stop and think. The conceit, the habit of healthiness is it's always going to be this way. My teacher said, I never really understood what it was like to have any kind of frailty or any kind of physical limitations until I was 70. Right? And then he had a different experience of people who struggled with pain or physical difficulty in zazen. Just wasn't in his... So this, when we think, I am the nature to grow old, we can't... it weakens our attachment or our habitual way of viewing the world. I am of the nature to have ill health means I too am vulnerable. I too am weak. This could happen to me. So what does that mean about how I'm living my life now? I am going to die. I believe it's in the Mahabharata where somebody asks one of the gods, what is the most curious thing in the world? What is the most amazing thing in the world? And the god says, that everyone's going to die and nobody believes it's going to happen to them. And it's true, isn't it? You know, when we have an encounter with either death of a loved one or illness or something that really, like, shakes us, we say, oh, wow, yeah, that could be me too. says here in the Deva Dutta Sutta, good man, did it never occur to you, an intelligent and mature man, I too am subject to aging and am not exempt from aging? Surely, I had better do good in body, speech, and mind. Later on in the sutta, it says, now, a disciple of the noble ones, consider this. I am not the only one subject to aging. Who has not gone beyond aging? To the extent that there are beings past and future passing away and re-arising, all beings are subject to aging, have not gone beyond aging. When he or she often reflects on this, the factors of the path take birth. He or she sticks with the path, develops it, cultivates it. As he or she sticks with that path, develops it, and cultivates it, the fetters are abandoned and the obsessions destroyed. Okay? So when you recall this, when you stick with this, something happens to us. Sure. Now, a disciple of the Noble One, consider this. I am not the only one subject to aging, who has not gone beyond aging. To the extent that there are beings, past, future, passing away and re-arising, all beings are subject to aging, have not gone beyond aging. When he or she, when they, let's say, when they often reflect on this, the factors of the path take birth. They stick with the path, develop it, cultivate it. As they stick with the path, develop it, and cultivate it, the fetters are abandoned and the obsessions are destroyed. And you can replace that with, now a disciple of the noble ones, consider this. I am not the only one who gets ill. I am not the only one that dies. No one has gone beyond illness and death and aging. All beings are subject to this. And when you reflect on this, the factors of the path take birth. In other words, the factors that support our engagement in the practice take birth. And we stick with the path. Stick with it. When we stick with the path, develop it and cultivate it, the fetters are abandoned and obsessions are destroyed. What Shinran calls blind passions, what we call delusions, the things that distract us and cause us to spend our lives. Like Fowler asked the question, what are you spending and being spent for in your life? So the things that we can, does that word fritter away?
No.
We can fritter away our time on all these things. Pema used to talk about dunzi. Dunzi is like harmless entertainment. It's like when you've had a hard day at work and you sit down and you open a travel magazine or something. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not like a terrible thing. But if you spent your whole life looking at travel magazines, that would be problematic. So this idea of these reflections, these remembrances, call us back to what's most important to us and allow us to engage in the teachings more deeply. And like the Han, in a monastic situation, there's a piece of wood with a hammer that calls you to the Zazen. Bop, 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 bop. And it says, basically, don't waste time. Great is the matter of life and death. Don't waste time. So this is like a wake-up call. These remembrances are a wake-up call. So the idea here is to reflect in this way and to dissolve denial about our lives. Reduce grasping. reduce corrosive attachments and come to rest in impermanence, recognize impermanence. And this is such a powerful teaching, impermanence. With this kind of reflection, we cultivate an attitude that encourages gratitude, appreciation, aliveness, presence, being engaged in our life. Thich Nhat Hanh says that these are our deepest fears, and we must invite them in order for them not to be our enemies. So if we're not in relationship to these facts, then we become unconscious, and we're often driven by the fears we cannot see. So we ask ourselves to stay close to this, the nature of growing old, the nature of ill health, the nature of death, the nature of the fact that all that is dear to us can pass away, will pass away, and that our actions are the ground on which we stand. What we have in our life is how we engage with our life, what we do with others, what we give to ourselves and others through body, speech, and mind. What do we do? We might call this, from a Soto Zen perspective, do we live the life of the dignified activity of a Buddha? You know, Buddha is action. Buddha is engagement. So how do we live that? So I was teaching a class a few years ago with a friend and colleague who's a longtime insight meditation teacher. And we were studying these. And I could just feel everything start to sink. And I thought, I think there's something else here. This is good. This is all really good. But for most of us human beings, challenge and confrontation, a certain kind of challenge and engagement like this, can make us sink. And there, I thought, this is only one half of reality. This is only one way. There was something missing to me. There was something missing in these. I was audacious enough to think that perhaps I could add something to the words of the Buddha. So I wrote these five other remembrances. Companions. So the first remembrance in this edition is, I am of the nature to awaken. I cannot escape the truth of my true nature. This is a challenge too, isn't it? I am of the nature to awaken. It's encouraging, but it's also kind of like, guess what? You cannot escape the truth of your true nature. You can try, you can run, but you cannot hide, right? Or you can hide for a while, but it ain't going to work, because in fact, the messengers of your life, the Buddha's activity in your life, will cause you to awaken if you give it even a little bit of a chance, even a crack. You know. The Buddha's teachings are like a spring. If you just give water even a little bit of a chance, it will create the Grand Canyon, right? It doesn't have to do much, just a little bit. Just widens and widens and widens and widens. You can't escape. So I paired this with I say, I am the nature to grow old. I cannot escape growing old. I am the nature to awaken. I cannot escape the truth of my true nature. Number two is, I am of the nature to have ill health. I cannot escape having ill health. And I wrote, I am of the nature to have compassion for self and others. I cannot escape the truth of my shared life with all others. I am of the nature to have compassion for self and others. There is, when we rest close to the teachings, it is inevitable that our heart will open. And remember, compassion is not just an emotion. Sometimes it's taught that way, but it's not. It's not just a feeling. Compassion is related to our emotional state. But compassion is an action. Compassion is engaged in our life. Compassion is stopping and responding. We may or may not have a warm and cozy feeling at that given time. That's nice. That's good. But our life of compassion cannot be based on the whims of our emotion. We have to go deeper than that and really taste the fact that we are of this life with others. That's who we are. And when we do that, the act of compassion, the engagement, arises. So I am of the nature to have compassion for self and others. I cannot escape the truth of my shared life with all others. You cannot. You can try, but you cannot. We are utterly interdependent. The third one, I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. I wrote, I am of the nature to be all that is present in this moment. I cannot escape the timeless vastness of justice. I am of the nature to be all that I am the nature to be all that is I am of the nature to be all that is present in this moment. I cannot escape the timeless vastness of justice. Again, when we stay close to what's most important to us, when we stay close to the Dharma, when we stay close to the way, it becomes quite obvious that I am of the nature of all this. Of all this in this moment. There is no reality outside of the reality of this moment, and I am inextricably woven into it. I cannot escape. I cannot be apart from this, just this, which is timeless and vast and without boundary. The fourth one is, all that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. I wrote, all that is dear to me, everyone I love, all that exists is of the nature of intimacy. There is no way to escape from the reality of interdependence. So, yes, it's true that things pass. People die, we lose jobs, or we move, or we, you know, all of this happens. But fundamentally, intimacy, interrelatedness, companionship, interconnection is what is most true. So as things pass, the relationship that is the fundamental nature of our life does not. And that, I think, is a refuge for us. It's a true refuge for us. All of these, I think, are refuges for us. We can be, we can understand and have deep compassion for the suffering that arises when things pass away that we love, especially that which is dear to us. But as we deepen into the moment and discover the intimacy of that moment, we know that grief is a reflection of love. And that the dearness of that which has passed is a reflection of the fact that we are intimately engaged with all reality. And that is what's most true. The fifth one, I I inherit the results of my actions in body, speech, and mind. My actions are the ground on which I stand. Or, my actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. And I wrote, I, in all reality, inherit the results of my actions of body, speech, and mind. My actions are the vehicle with which I express my vow to realize the way with all beings. This is the incomparable wisdom that is always present. So, I, in all reality, inherit the results of my actions of body, speech, and mind. You know, this expands this out. When we engage in things thoughtlessly, it is not simply us that inherits the results. It is all reality that inherits the results. When we do not take care with our body, speech, and mind, we do not practice the way with others, then they suffer as well, right? It's not. So we have to take responsibility. This fifth one is really about taking responsibility for our lives. For that which is given to us, using it well, using our lives well. We're not using our lives well, manifesting our lives well, engaging our lives well, all of that. But we have responsibility, and that's one of the things that this really gets at. But we have responsibility to all of reality, and we are supported by all of reality. So my actions are the vehicle with which I express my vow to realize the way with all beings. That's the core of our actions. That's what we want to remain close to, right, when we're going about our days. This is the incomparable wisdom that is always present. This incomparable wisdom supports us every day. It's absolutely accessible to us at all times, no matter what we're doing. It doesn't have to be in the Zendo. You know, we talk a lot about driving and being in the grocery line here. You know, what is it like to stand in the grocery line and know that the incomparable wisdom is present right there? You know, even while you're grumpy. It's like Shinshu and I were talking to one of my cousins not too long ago, and she was talking about going to the gym, and she said, when I'm grumpy and I don't want to go to the gym, I go to the gym grumpy. And I thought, that's it. That's it. It's not harsh. It's just simple. When you're in the grocery line and you're grumpy because you need to get going and somebody's counting pennies out of their purse, the new thing, you know, chip thing. Oh. Takes forever. Or like I was in line the other day, and we got all the way through the grocery line, and somebody else's card was in there, so they were paying for my groceries. So we had to take the card out, start all over again, do this whole thing, and then while we were starting it all over again, the kid behind me in line started pushing stuff over the scanner. So that got added to my bill. I was standing there. I was not in a particularly good mood. This is when it's really helpful to say, incomparable wisdom is present. Yeah? So, you know, this incomparable wisdom is our true nature. This, these five remembrances and these five other remembrances, if we keep them close, transform our lives. Yeah. So the way we practice with these, I recommend you return to them frequently and see what happens. Notice what happens in your body. Notice what happens in your mind, what happens in your heart, what happens in your spirit. Notice how does this impact you? What actually encourages you? Notice how it influences your choices, your thoughts, your actions. You might also do writing with them. pick one and use a journal to write what your thoughts and feelings are, how it impacted you. Could also talk with a fellow practitioner or a friend. Have a five remembrances and five other remembrances buddy to talk to. Or somebody who doesn't want to do it but is willing to listen. This is what we do to actually feed our practice in a day-to-day way. Come and talk to Shinshu and I about it. You know, what happens when you take these up? And what difference are the five remembrances and the five other remembrances? How do they balance one another? To me, they balance one another. They actually create a circle, a whole, that is both challenging in different ways, and encouraging in different ways. They really help us wake up.